Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Business Movers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. To listen to Business Movers 1 week early and ad-free, join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Download the Wondery app in your Apple or Google Play mobile app store today. It's September 2003 in the halls of E-Universe headquarters in Los Angeles. Chris DeWolf and Tom Anderson make a beeline for the office of MySpace project manager Kyle Brinkman. MySpace has only been live for a month, but major issues are already piling up for Chris and Tom's response-based team. Users aren't coming to MySpace, and E-Universe CEO Brad Greenspan is losing patience. But right now, Chris and Tom have a bigger problem to deal with than lack of traffic. Computer programmer Gabe Harriman has just done a complete rebuild of MySpace to make it easier to alter and update the site. But Chris and Tom are convinced Gabe dropped the ball when it came to designing the site's security systems. Chris and Tom storm into Kyle's office.
Kyle, the site's been hacked. You have to fix it.
What are you talking about?
Tom and I just spent several minutes looking at a profile page with bright blue wallpaper and some hearts and smiley faces on it. Bunch of other profiles with colored backgrounds. We've been hacked.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those pages. I thought the same thing at first, too, but it's not it. Trust me.
Then what the hell's going on?
When Gabe worked on the rebuild, he and the other programmers made a mistake. They didn't block markup in the user submissions.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, you know, most websites that allow users to post photos or text block any insertion of web languages like HTML.
No, I still don't get it.
These websites block users from being able to control what their page looks like.
Gabe messed up. He didn't do that. And these users took advantage.
Okay. So they uploaded some code.
And that's not a security issue?
Well, you know...
Kyle, we need to fix this.
I want the programmers to take care of this. ASAP.
Yeah, sure thing.
Chris heads for the door. But when he sees a big grin on Tom's face, he stops in his tracks.
What are you smiling about, Tom?
This is what we hoped the site would be, Chris. We want to sell MySpace to people as a place where they can express themselves, where they can be whoever they want to be. And now they can do that in a way we didn't even think of. We've been running around in circles trying to get new people to the site. Customizable profile pages offer us a new angle. Something like this will get younger users excited. It's like decorating your locker at school, but online.
Chris smiles. He's starting to get the picture. But Kyle still has concerns.
Guys, I mean, it wasn't a hack this time, but kids entering in their own code, it is a security risk. Someone could use that feature to do more than just change the color of their background. Who knows? They could get passwords, delete profile pages, send messages to someone else. It could get bad.
Chris turns to Tom. What do you think?
Well, Kyle's right. We have to take care of the security issues on our end. But this is too good to pass up. This is going to attract so many young people to MySpace. Pretty soon, Friendster will look like an AARP meeting.
Chris and Tom realized their bug was a feature. The news that users could change the look of their profile pages spread quickly, and MySpace's user numbers started to rise. But growth still wasn't happening as fast as Chris and Tom had hoped. So to attract even more users, the pair would again draw on one of their greatest skills, taking something that already existed and making it a little bit better. Chris and Tom thought of this as borrowing and improving, but many of their detractors called it stealing.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of the hunt. But are you getting the thrill of the best deals? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores, like Urban Outfitters, Fenty Beauty, and Expedia. And even stack sales on top of cash back. It's easy to use, and you get your cash back through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase.
From Wondery, I'm Lindsey Graham, and this is Business Movers. Chris and Tom had modeled MySpace after Friendster and tried to find ways to make their site better. Now, desperate to grow, they scoured the internet again for new models they could borrow and improve upon. They lifted blogging functions from a website called Zanga, and they added a photo rating feature based on a site called hotornot.com, where a user's hotness was ranked on a scale of 1 to 10. But these new features alone weren't attracting people to MySpace fast enough to satisfy eUniverse CEO Brad Greenspan. eUniverse was struggling financially. If Chris and Tom didn't make something happen fast, the new Brad would likely put MySpace on the chopping block. To save the site, Chris and Tom needed a big idea. So Tom returned to Friendster for inspiration. But this time, he wouldn't steal a feature. He would steal a person. Pinup model Tila Tequila had roughly 40,000 friends on Friendster, making her one of the most popular people on social media at the time, and perhaps the first true internet celebrity.
You were basically one of the kind of original social media celebrities.
Yeah, I was literally the first person to kind of catapult social media into what it is today.
Friendster had pushed Tila into the pop culture spotlight, but there was a problem. They kept deleting her account. According to Tila, her pictures were too hot for the people at Friendster. She was fed up, and she publicly posted about it. When Tom saw one of her posts, he reached out to Tila and convinced her to ditch Friendster and come to MySpace. Eventually, Tila agreed, but she didn't leave quietly. She sent a message to her 40,000 friends and told them to join her at MySpace. Many of them did. And not long after Tila joined the site, MySpace had its biggest day yet. On September 26, 2003, 6,000 new users joined, and the numbers kept climbing from there. This helped Brad Greenspan see MySpace as the key to saving eUniverse. So he told Chris and Tom to forget about the e-commerce business and focus on MySpace full-time. Chris and Tom were thrilled to finally have Brad's support, but their moment of elation would be brief, because there was a coup in the works at eUniverse. This is the second episode in our four-part series on MySpace, Unintended Consequences. It's late fall 2003, outside the boardroom at eUniverse. Tom is overseas, shutting down eUniverse's e-commerce business in China. So today, Chris is flying solo. He's been summoned by eUniverse's new leadership, no doubt to justify MySpace's existence. Recently, a venture capital group called Vantage Point offered to make a significant investment in eUniverse. But there was a catch. Vantage Point wanted to get rid of CEO Brad Greenspan. The eUniverse board took the deal. Chris and Tom had worked long and hard to win Brad's support for MySpace. And just when they had, Brad was gone. Ever since, the two founders have been at loggerheads with the new leadership. So Chris takes a deep breath and steals himself for the fight waiting for him on the other side of the door. As Chris steps into the room, eUniverse's new chief financial officer, Tom Flahey, lays into him.
Chris, I've been brought here to get eUniverse's spending under control. And I gotta tell you, I don't know what to do with you and your department. You could leave us alone and let us do our jobs. What is your job, Chris? It doesn't seem to be making money. Last I checked, ResponseBase doesn't even sell products anymore. Isn't Tom Anderson in China shutting down e-commerce right now?
Tom's trip to China marks the end of ResponseBase as an e-commerce division of eUniverse. That means the only thing ResponseBase has to offer is MySpace. Tom's in China because our former boss sent him there, because Brad saw MySpace's potential and he wanted us to focus all our attention on it. So your team's job is to focus all your attention on a website that's entirely unprofitable. For now, but you've seen the data, we hit 100,000 users in October. That number's getting bigger every day. Yeah, but how much profit have you made, Chris? Chris doesn't have a good answer. Since Tila Tequila joined the site, MySpace has been adding thousands of new users a day. But MySpace's spike in popularity still hasn't earned anything. There might be potential in MySpace, Chris. Sure. But right now, it's nothing but a financial drain at a time when we're trying to turn the company around. Well, MySpace is the only thing that can turn this company around. You should be bending over backwards to give us your support. No, I think you should be begging us to keep your site up and running. If you want to be a part of the future of this company, take this advice. Find some way to make some money. Look what's happening online right now. Look at how fast we're growing. Social networks are the future, and thanks to MySpace, you're getting in on the ground floor. God, you're blind if you can't see that. Chris was willing to fight the new leadership and bet on MySpace because he was confident the site would take off. And indeed, throughout the fall, MySpace's numbers would continue to climb. By the end of 2003, the site would hit 1 million users. Ultimately, Flay and the rest of the new leadership began to change their tune. E-Universe made Chris and Tom a compelling offer. The company would give them the resources they needed to continue developing the site, but in exchange, they wanted to own 2/3 of MySpace. Chris, Tom, and his team would retain the other third. The two founders knew it wasn't ideal to give up a majority stake in the website they created, but they realized that without E-Universe's backing, there was no way they could keep MySpace afloat. So to even out the deal, Chris also convinced E-Universe to infuse MySpace with cash for operations. It was a mere $50,000, a far cry from the millions Friendster had received. But Chris and Tom would get creative and find ways to put that money to good use. With ResponseBase's operations shut down and the burden of selling ResponseBase products lifted, the two founders could now devote all their time to MySpace. And for Tom, that truly meant spending all of his time on the site. When people joined MySpace, they automatically had one friend, Tom. Tom's profile picture was there to welcome new users to the site, and his profile page was a place for these users to learn about what MySpace had to offer. As everyone's first MySpace friend, Tom was quickly becoming the face of the organization. And Tom communicated directly with MySpace users, too. If there was a bug on the site that needed to be fixed, Tom let everyone know. If there was a new feature on the way, Tom gave everyone a preview of what they could expect. This was at first a strange place for Tom to be in. As a guy who'd always been rather shy, being the public face of anything was a bit daunting. But Tom accepted his role and used his newfound fame to help push the site in the press.
You becoming the poster child, how did that happen?
It actually goes way back to Friendster. Maybe this is like too boring of a story for TV, but there used to be this network where, you know, you couldn't see people unless you had a friend.
Right.
And Friendster was first, and we were trying to compete, so when people signed up, they wouldn't see anything. That's boring. So I put myself as this person that could connect everyone else so you'd see people right when you signed up. That was the idea.
As Tom made more public appearances, people even started to recognize him on the street. While in the past he might have recoiled from such notoriety, Tom now started to embrace it. Getting recognized by people gave him an idea about how he and Chris could better market the site without spending much. When people recognized Tom, they often greeted him as if they were old friends, despite the fact that they'd never actually met. Tom started to think about how people interacted on his website. Users connected over shared interests, built relationships, and communicated with each other as though they were real-world friends. So Tom thought it would be a great idea to allow MySpace friends to get to know each other in real life. The best way to do that was to throw a party. Tom and Chris got to work organizing MySpace parties in major cities across the country. They advertised these get-togethers as a chance for friends on MySpace to meet each other in real life. They promised great music, cheap booze, and a good time. And as an added bonus, people could hang out with MySpace Tom. The parties brought out a side of Tom most people close to him had never seen. He played host and kept the festivities going as late into the night as he could. And as he made his way around the country, Tom used MySpace to drum up excitement about the next stop on the tour. The parties fueled user engagement on the site, and in turn, that user engagement fueled the parties. It was another example of how Chris and Tom were able to use creative marketing to overcome a lack of funding. And while Tom played the part of host and MC, Chris utilized the parties to secure sponsors. Alcohol companies and clubs would give MySpace a reduced rate in return for the free advertising the parties would provide. And smaller bands looking for opportunities to play would jump at the chance to headline the events. Bringing MySpace into the real world paid off. These parties helped build a MySpace community and created a sense of loyalty among users. Many started to see MySpace as a place where they could make real-life connections. And as a result, major brands began to view MySpace as a way to make real-life connections with potential customers. And while throwing parties and courting celebrities all helped MySpace grow, there was still one feature in particular that helped MySpace stand apart from its competitor, Friendster. Chris and Tom said they created MySpace as a place where people could express themselves. While Friendster was very concerned with limiting people's expression and ability to communicate, MySpace encouraged personal expression and free communication. The freedom MySpace provided was a huge selling point for the site. It was something Chris and Tom were proud of. But soon, the two founders' free-spirited approach to social media would have unintended consequences. Social media would threaten to put MySpace in the sights of parents, the press, and the police.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. FedEx offers fast delivery, more visibility, simple returns, and weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. population on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. With FedEx, you get picture proof of delivery, ensuring you always know where your package is. Returns are simple with packageless and paperless returns. Plus, FedEx Ground is also faster to more locations than UPS Ground. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. So, what are you waiting for? See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
It's December 31st, 2003, in a small apartment in Miami, Florida. RJ Lockwood, a 27-year-old nightclub worker, does his best to clean up his place. Picks up the clothes off his floor, carries used dishes into the kitchen, and straightens the chairs in his cramped living room. RJ is nervous but excited. It's getting close to midnight on New Year's Eve, and he has high hopes for the coming year. RJ has spent the last 6 weeks in a cyber relationship with a woman online, and tomorrow he finally gets to meet her in person. RJ's new cell phone rings. He recognizes his friend's number. Hey man, what's up?
Everyone's here, where are you? You're gonna miss midnight.
RJ can hear a party going on in the background. As much as he'd like to join in the celebrations, though, he's far more interested in making his apartment look as presentable as he possibly can. Nah, I told you I wasn't coming. Getting my place ready for tomorrow.
Seriously, you're missing out on New Year's Eve for a girl you don't even know.
I do know her. I know everything about her.
RJ, you've never even met this woman.
We've been talking for 6 weeks.
On MySpace? That's not real life, man.
RJ almost hangs up. He's tired of being harangued by his friends about his new relationship. Well, I'm meeting her in real life tomorrow, so shut up about it.
Hey, man, I'm not trying to upset you. It's New Year's Eve. I want it to work out. I do, but I'm just worried you're getting your hopes up. You're going to be let down.
She won't let me down.
RJ, you told me she already has a boyfriend.
Yeah, she's leaving him and coming to see me tomorrow. Everything's going to work out, man. Trust me.
All right, if you say so.
RJ has had enough. Oh, whatever, man. Go ring in the new year. Leave me alone. RJ hangs up the phone and gets back to cleaning up the apartment. Then, just minutes before midnight, there's a knock at the door. RJ assumes it's another friend coming to harass him, so he reaches for the handle. Guys, I told you I'm not coming out. RJ freezes. He doesn't recognize the man in the doorway. But before he can say anything, The man pushes inside and shoves RJ to the ground. RJ scrambles to get up, but the man raises a gun. RJ reaches for his cell phone and desperately dials 911. RJ Lockwood took 4 bullets to the chest. He died with his phone in his hand. RJ's murder would alter the way much of the country viewed social media, and MySpace in particular. The murder would give rise to questions about the safety of online relationships, shed light on other potential dangers of sites like MySpace, and ultimately force Chris and Tom to make a dramatic change. RJ Lockwood's desperate phone call to the police cut out before he could say a word to the 911 operator on the other line. And in these early days of cell phones, authorities couldn't track a caller's location. As a result, it would be days before friends discovered RJ's body on the apartment floor. At first, the police had little to go on. Nothing had been stolen from the apartment, and there were no signs of a struggle. Then, a few of RJ's friends came forward. They told the authorities that RJ had started a MySpace relationship with a woman who had a boyfriend. These friends were convinced RJ's murder had something to do with his online activity. Hearing this, the police turned to MySpace for help. They asked the site to provide them with any and all communication between RJ and the woman, or the woman and her boyfriend. The police wanted anything that could help them possibly identify a killer. The MySpace team was stunned by the news. Some of them were worried an incident like this would create a public backlash, so the team reacted quickly and calmly. They told the police they wanted to help and would provide any details that would be useful to their investigation. But there was a problem. MySpace wasn't capturing any information from its users. When the site was designed, a database had been created to store users' basic information, but no systems had been put in place to store posts or messages sent between users. If someone wanted to get rid of something they'd posted on MySpace, all they had to do was delete it, and it was gone forever. MySpace couldn't help the Miami police in any way. There was no trace of communication left on the site between RJ, the woman he was hoping to meet in person, or the woman's boyfriend. And if there had been communication between them on the site, someone had deleted it. The police hit a roadblock, and the case would remain unsolved. The murder in Miami cast a shadow over the MySpace offices. At the beginning of 2004, the site was enjoying its greatest growth to date. They had surpassed the 1 million user mark and was attracting even more users and advertisers. Chris and Tom's hard work was starting to pay off, but they couldn't celebrate. They were too busy dealing with the fact that they had almost no control over what was happening on their own website. And while the murder in Miami didn't escalate into a PR disaster as some at the company feared, there was a growing public perception that online relationships on sites like MySpace were dangerous. Just as the success of Friendster led to the birth of MySpace, MySpace's growth led to a series of other sites. And these new sites latched onto the MySpace model of a free platform where people could be who they wanted, communicate with whom they wanted, however they wanted. What Chris and Tom and the creators of those new sites didn't foresee was that they had given rise to social media platforms in which adults could easily connect with children. And police across the country would soon find themselves dealing with a rise in online predators.
You know, when these kids go online and they meet somebody, you don't know. It could be somebody across the United States. It could be a next-door neighbor.
It's too accessible to children, basically. And parents don't monitor their children properly to know what they're getting on.
As concern regarding online predators grew among parent and community groups, MySpace had no choice but to take action. Chris and Tom set up a range of new features to try to curb contact between adults and minors. Ultimately, MySpace said they would make it impossible for users who were over 18 to request the friendship of someone under 18. But there was a flaw in this policy. MySpace didn't require people to submit their real names or real ages when setting up a profile page. All predators had to do was lie. And soon, stories about the dangers of MySpace became commonplace.
For so many kids, a MySpace page is a rite of passage filled with pictures, likes, dislikes, personal details, and that's been the problem.
He met her on MySpace. Subsequently, he created a relationship with her, and she fell in love with him, someone she'd never seen.
When that Florida teenager went to meet the boy who befriended her on MySpace, she was kidnapped.
These stories caught the attention of politicians, many of whom began to sound the alarm, but few had any real solutions to offer. So Chris and Tom knew they had to take action. They got to work on a project that would help identify and remove registered sex offenders from the site. They tried to develop methods that would keep closer tabs on online criminal activity. As a result of their efforts, MySpace would eventually purge thousands of users, but for many, it wasn't nearly enough. Chris and Tom understood that any new technology with a large cultural impact was bound to come under fire. In the past, people had attacked the negative influence of television and video games, even comic books. And at the time, pundits and experts were already arguing about whether or not kids should have access to cell phones. But social media, many argued, was different. Marketing was in Chris DeWolf's blood. He knew that a website that was seen as dangerous, as a haven for killers and predators, would be impossible to market. So Chris set out to change public perception. He pushed MySpace to make a continued effort to put safety first by developing new practices and helping the police wherever and however they could. But as a skilled marketer, Chris also knew the best way to change the narrative was to change the conversation. As Chris and Tom looked for new ways to shore up safety, they also began thinking about the future of their website and some of the ways they could use MySpace to make a positive impact on the world. In 2004, their ideas would start to take shape. And soon, Chris and Tom would launch a new feature that would drown out the bad press and turn the small social media startup into an entertainment giant.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
It's spring 2004 at the E-Universe offices in Los Angeles. Chris DeWolf strides down the hall, imbued with energy. Tom Anderson lumbers behind. The two founders have just come from a meeting with a MySpace team member, Jason Pfeffer, a jack-of-all-trades who handles advertising, revenue reporting, and most importantly, security. Over the past few months, MySpace has been under constant fire due to safety and security-related issues. Jason just proposed some sweeping changes to MySpace designed to address the problems head-on. Chris is thrilled at the prospect, but Tom is furious. As the two founders slip into a private conference room, the normally shy and reserved Tom lets Chris know how he feels.
Chris, this is bullshit. Some 1984 Orwellian stuff. Oh, you're being a little dramatic, Tom, don't you think? No. And this isn't what I signed up for. Come on, it's not the end of the world. It's security measures. Security measures. Jason is proposing we set up a system that stores files and collects information on our users. We're not spying on anyone. We're just storing the messages. Yeah, so if the cops call our brand new 24-hour hotline, we can just violate people's privacy and hand it over. Tom, the hotline, just like the rest of these measures, is designed to help the police do their jobs.
That proposal was too well written. Like some law student wrote it. Who has Jason been talking to?
His dad, I think. His dad, the judge?
Yeah, his dad, the judge. He's helping us help the police.
Oh, God. Look, I don't care what some judge says. I care about keeping MySpace free.
Well, so do I, but what good is it being free if no one wants to come to it? We have a serious PR problem, man. We need to make a change.
Listen, Chris, I get it. I mean, you watch the news, it seems like MySpace is just full of murderers. And that we're deliberately saying no to the cops who are begging us for information to solve crime. But you might want to remind Jason and his dad, the judge, that just because they say something on the news doesn't mean it's true.
Of course it doesn't mean it's true. I know that, Tom, and so does Jason. But we're offering people a platform to talk to complete strangers. We're throwing parties encouraging strangers to meet up with strangers. And we're growing faster than we can keep up with. We have to put stronger policies in place.
I don't work for the police, Chris. I work for MySpace. Or I thought I did.
Chris audibly groans.
Look, man, I know this isn't what you signed up for, and I didn't either. There are a million other things I'd rather be focused on besides this issue. But the public is turning against us. We can't ignore it. We can't keep track of everything that happens on the site, Chris. I know that. But people are getting killed, man. We have to do something. We have. We've acted in good faith. We've taken major steps to change things. But we set up MySpace in a way that lets people express themselves. Tom, we're not talking about people changing the color of their damn backgrounds. We're talking about horrible things. I know you don't like these changes, but you have to see that this is important. It is important. But I'm worried we're making a mistake. I am too. But I'm not as worried about that as what might happen if we do nothing.
After some discussion, Tom agreed with Chris that something had to be done. With the help of Jason's father, who served as a Los Angeles Superior Court judge, Jason got MySpace up to speed when it came to storing files that could help with police investigations. And Chris and Tom's efforts to shore up MySpace's security helped change the public conversation. While stories about the dangers of social media would continue far into the future, reports about the changes MySpace was making quickly made their way into the press. Chris and Tom even went beyond the scope of Jason's proposal when MySpace started working directly with law enforcement to establish more policies that made it harder for potential predators to connect with minors on the site. Finally, as summer of 2004 approached, the problems were diminishing and the negative press was dying down. Chris and Tom felt like they could get back to the business of growing their site. So the two founders dove back into throwing MySpace parties. They focused on throwing parties in popular nightlife spots in cities like Los Angeles and did their best to entice local Hollywood scenesters to join MySpace, promoting their profiles to their friends, fans, and followers. And while there may not have been a name for it yet, Chris and Tom were creating and launching what was arguably the first wave of online influencers, and the strategy paid off. While no one topped Tila Tequila, many of these new celebrity users brought a large following with them just like she had. In 2004, MySpace was on the rise, but Chris and Tom still hoped to someday overtake Friendster as the biggest online social network. But over the course of the year, the pair's vision for the future of MySpace began to change. Dealing with safety protocols and news reports on the dangers of social networks got Chris and Tom thinking on a larger scale. They wanted to turn MySpace into something new, something that would take the focus off the potential negative aspects of MySpace and highlight the way the site could change people's lives for the better. Chris and Tom were thrilled with the site's growth and success, but they were convinced they were still missing an opportunity. They believed MySpace had the potential to transform into something beyond profile pages and simple marketing tools. They believed the site could grow to function more like movies, television, and other traditional media, and less like the freewheeling platform they had initially created. Chris and Tom were confident that this was possible. They just didn't know how to do it yet. But one night, while Chris and Tom watched a band play at Los Angeles's famed club, The Viper Room, everything clicked. The two would realize that MySpace needed to do more than attract scenesters. They needed to attract new bands with big potential. Instead of just providing users with profile pages, MySpace would also serve as a website for bands to share their songs, grow their fan bases, and launch their careers. Other performers would follow suit and use MySpace as a platform to showcase their latest creations. The two founders launched MySpace, a Friendster knockoff, with no money and few resources. But soon, MySpace would transform the music industry, create a new brand of celebrity, and catch the eye of some of the wealthiest people in the world. From Wondery, this is episode 2 of Fighting for MySpace for Business Movers. On the next episode, the success of MySpace music and the site's influence on pop culture attract potential buyers with real money, like media mogul Rupert Murdoch. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Business Movers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey. If you'd like to learn more about MySpace, we recommend Stealing MySpace by Julia Angwin, The Culture of Connectivity by Jose van Dyck, and The Rise and Fall of MySpace by Nicholas Jackson and Alexis E. Madrigal for The Atlantic. A quick note about our dramatizations. In most cases, we can't know everything that happened.
but all our reenactments are based on historical research. Business Movers is hosted, edited, and executive produced by me, Lindsey Graham, for Airship. Audio editing by Molly Bond. Sound design by Derek Behrens. Music by Lindsey Graham. This episode is written and researched by Michael Federico. Executive producers are Stephen Walters for Airship and Jenny Lauer Beckman and Marshall Louie for Wondery.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.